and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, November 4th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. The first article from the front page, a close call. Trump, Biden, neck and neck in battleground states, but Trump wins in Iowa, Associated Press, Washington. President Donald Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden were locked in tight races in battleground states across the country Tuesday night as they concluded an epic campaign that will shape America's response to the surging pandemic and foundational questions of economic fairness and racial justice. Biden picked up the first battleground state of the night, New Hampshire, a small prize that Trump tried to steal from Democrats, but races were too early to call in the most fiercely contested and critical states on the map, including Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. Biden won California, the nation's biggest electoral haul, and other predictable victories, including Colorado and Virginia, two former battlegrounds that have become Democratic strongholds. Trump wins, including Kansas, North Dakota, and other conservative bastions. In Iowa, with a 75 of 99 Iowa counties fully reporting results, Trump was maintaining a lead over Biden late Tuesday night. The Associated Press called the state for Trump at 11:30 p.m. Americans made their choice as the nation faced a confluence of historic crisis, with each candidate declaring the other fundamentally unfit to navigate the challenges. Daily life has been upended by the coronavirus, which has killed more than 232,000 Americans and cost millions of jobs. Millions of voters braved their worries about the virus and some long lines to turn out in person, joining 102 million fellow Americans who voted days or weeks earlier, a record number that represented 73% of the total vote in the 2016 presidential election. Early results in several key battleground states were in flux as election officials processed a historically large number of mail-in votes. Democrats typically outperform Republicans in mail voting, while the GOP looks to make up ground in election day turnout. That means the early margins between the candidates could be influenced by which type of votes, early or election day, were being reported by the states. Trump and Biden were locked in a tight race in Florida, and it was too early for the Associated Press to call the perennial battleground state. Control of the Senate was at stake, too. Democrats needed to net 3 seats if Biden captured the White House to gain control of all the Washington for the first time in a decade. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky won re-election in an early victory for the Republicans, and GOP Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, a close Trump ally, fought off a fierce challenge to hang on to his seat. The parties traded a pair of seats in other early results. Democratic former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper defeated incumbent Senator Cory Gardner, and an Alabama Republican Tommy Tuberville knocked off Senator Doug Jones. The House was expected to remain under Democratic control. As the results began to come in, the nation braced for what was to come and an outcome that might not be known for days. A new anti-scaling fence was erected around the White House and in downtowns from New York to Denver to Minneapolis. Workers boarded up businesses lest the vote led to unrest. For Trump, the election stood as a judgment on his 4 years in office, a term in which he bent Washington to his will, challenged faith in its institutions, and changed how America was viewed across the globe. Rarely trying to unite a country divided along lines of race and class, he has often acted as an insurgent against the government and led while undermining the nation's scientists, bureaucracy, and media. At the White House on Tuesday night, far more than 100 family members, friends, donors, and staff were set to watch returns from the East Room. Trump was watching votes come in upstairs in the residence with a few close aides. Most top campaign officials were monitoring returns from a, quote, war room, end quote, set up in the Eisenhower Executive Office building. Biden spent the day last-minute campaigning in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where he was born, and in Philadelphia, with a couple of local stops in Wilmington, Delaware, where he was spending election night. No major problems arose on Tuesday outside the typical glitches of a presidential election. Some polling places opened late, robocalls provided false information to voters in Iowa and Michigan, and machines or software malfunctioned in some counties in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Texas. The cybersecurity agency at the Department of Homeland Security said there were no outward signs by midday of any malicious activity. The record-setting early vote and legal skirmishing over how it would be counted drew unsupported allegations of fraud from Trump, who had repeatedly refused to guarantee he would honor the election's results. Voters were especially likely to call the public health crisis the nation's most important issue, with the economy close behind. Fewer named healthcare, racism, law enforcement, immigration, or climate change. The survey found that Trump's leadership loomed large in voters' decisions making. Our next front page article: Ernst wins hard-fought Senate race. Re-election marks costliest race in Iowa history, by Rod Beauchart, Gazette, Des Moines Bureau. Des Moines. Republican Joni Ernst, the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate in Iowa on Tuesday, became the first woman re-elected to that federal post after surviving a scare by edging out Democrat Teresa Greenfield in a hard-fought and expensive 2020 political slugfest. With 86% of 1,661 precincts reporting, Ernst, 50, a retired soldier who previously served as a county auditor and state senator, polled 50.6% of the vote en route to a second six-year Senate term. Greenfield, 57, a Des Moines businesswoman making her first bid for statewide elective office, had garnered 46.4% in unofficial results. Greenfield forged an early lead by capturing a strong share of Iowa's record absentee balloting, due in part to the COVID-19 pandemic, but Ernst closed the gap with a strong showing, especially in rural counties, as GOP enthusiasm surged late in the race. WHO TV in Des Moines projected Ernst the winner shortly after 10:30 p.m. as an unofficial results ticked in. Ernst emerged victorious in a hotly contested race with national implications for both parties that drew record spending levels by stressing her rural roots and conservative positions while charging Democrats, with the help of Iowa campaign stops by President Donald Trump and others, would push the country too far left, raise taxes, and impose socialistic policies that would stifle economic growth. Republicans and their allies fought to avoid a crushing defeat in a key toss-up race by investing heavily in attack ads designated to quote-unquote demonize Greenfield and to suppress the turnout, according to political experts, while Democrats leveled attacks against Ernst for failing to keep campaign promises and allying too close with Trump in his COVID-19 response. For her part, Ernst touted her work on Iowa-specific issues like the federal ethanol mandate, a beloved program in Iowa's agricultural sector, and federal assistance in the wake of this summer's derecho. Ernst, a conservative opposed to abortion rights, said she has worked in bipartisan fashion in the Senate while also ensuring her Republican base that she has supported Trump, who considered her as a running 2016 running mate, and top conservative caucuses like repealing the Federal Affordable Care Act and approving another conservative justice to the U.S. Supreme Court. Viewed as a critical cog in both major political parties' plans to hold control of the U.S. Senate for the next 2 years, the Iowa race was the second most expensive in U.S. history and by far the most expensive in Iowa electoral annals, with more than $234 million spent by the campaigns, political parties, political advocacy organizations, and others interested in influencing Tuesday's outcome, based on figures calculated by the Center for Responsive Politics. By contrast, campaign spending in Ernst's 2014 race with the Democrat Bruce Braley totaled about $87 million. Going into the election, Republicans held 53 seats and Democrats 47. The six-year Senate position pays $174,000 in annually with health care, pension, and free parking benefits and allowances. Iowa's 2020 Senate race was a hotly contested battle from the get-go once Greenfield emerged victorious in a four-way Democratic primary. Poll results swung as the candidates debated and crisscrossed the state, although Ernst and her GOP allies spent more time at face-to-face events while Greenfield employed more Zoom encounters during a political season that was transformed by the COVID-19 pandemic. The record amount of money spent on Iowa's U.S. Senate race, which began when the first ad aired in February 2018, experts said, could be attributed to multiple factors: a competitive race between Ernst and Greenfield, a surge in political donations nationally, and national implications of the outcome. pledging to, quote, put hardworking Iowans first, end quote. Greenfield made healthcare and the GOP coronavirus response a major focus of her campaign, saying she would expand Obamacare by offering a public option and protect Medicare and Social Security, while noting earned support for the scrapping Obamacare and raising concerns the GOP incumbent would privatize entitlements many Iowans paid into and depend on. Greenfield backed up her commitment with a strong personal story of having weathered a tough period as a young single mother after her husband died in a workplace accident, thanks to part to Social Security survivor benefits, an experience that she said would guide her efforts to protect working people and seniors in gridlock-plagued Washington, D.C. A relative political newcomer, Greenfield also scored support from independents by pledging to work across the political aisle to break the partisan gridlock on issues like infrastructure, funding, and immigration reform, while casting Ernst as someone who promised to, quote, make 'em sequel, end quote, but became a Beltway insider, putting GOP priorities ahead of the need of Iowans. Our last front page article, Republicans fight to retain Senate majority, Associated Press, Washington. The battle for control of the Senate tightened Tuesday after Democrats picked up a seat in Colorado, but suffered a setback in Alabama, and Republicans held their own in high-profile races in South Carolina, Texas, and Kansas, narrowing the political map. Republicans fought to retain their Senate majority against a surge of Democrats challenging President Donald Trump's allies. Both parties saw paths to victory, but the Democrats were narrowing, with several races still too early to call and one Georgia contest heading to a January runoff. The final verdict was not known on election night. Democrats ousted Cory Gardner for John Hickenlooper in Colorado, a must-win seat if Democrats were to wrest the majority. Gardner was among the most endangered incumbents as his state shifted leftward in the Trump era. Quote, it's time for a different approach, end quote, Hickenlooper said in a live video message posted on Facebook. But several battlegrounds broke for Republicans, including an open seat in Kansas. Representative Roger Marshall prevailed over Democratic State Senator Barbara Boiler, a former Republican who energized Democrats in a state that hasn't elected a Democrat to the Senate since 1932. From New England to the Deep South and the Midwest to the Mountain West, Republicans defended seats in states once considered long shots for Democrats. The Trump administration's handling of the COVID-19 crisis, its economic fallout, and the nation's uneasy mood all seemed to be on the ballot. Trump loomed large over the Senate races, as it did Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. They swooped into key states, including Iowa, Georgia, and Michigan, in the final days of their campaigns. Voters ranked the pandemic and the economy as top concerns, according to the AP VoteCast, a national survey of the electorate. Securing the Senate majority will be vital for the winner of the presidency. Senators confirm administration nominees, including the cabinet, and can propel or stall the White House agenda. With Republicans now controlling the chamber 53-47, three or four seats will determine party control depending on who wins the presidency, because the vice president can break a tie. In Kentucky, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell fended off Democrat Amy McGrath, but he acknowledged his GOP colleagues face tougher races. White House confidant Lindsey Graham survived the fight of his political life in South Carolina against Democrat Jamie Harrison, whose campaign stunned Washington by drawing more than $100 million in small-scale donations. In Texas, Senator John Cornyn turned back Democrat M.J. Heger. Republicans flipped the seat in Alabama that Democrat Doug Jones had won in a special election, as former Auburn football coach Tommy Tuberville was elected in the Trump stronghold. In Georgia, two Senate seats were being contested. One already is headed to a January 5th runoff after no candidate reached the 50% threshold to win. GOP Senator Kelly Loeffler will face Democrat Raphael Warnock in a special election for the seat Loeffler was tapped to fill for retired Senator Johnny Iskason. Moving to the second page of the Gazette, which is Election 2020 News, Hinson upsets Finkenhauer in House District 1 race. Democrat had an early lead, by James Q. Lynch, Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Iowa First District voters are proving it to be fickle. For the third time in 6 years, they've elected a new U.S. House representative, and for the second time in 2 years, they've thrown out the incumbent in favor of a newcomer. This time, it was Republican State Representative Ashley Hinson of Marion who defeated incumbent Democrat Abby Finkenhauer of Cedar Rapids. Hinson had to wait for victory after Finkenhauer rolled up a massive margin in early returns in Linn County. For example, Finkenhauer captured roughly two-thirds of the early vote. By midnight, however, Hinson had pulled ahead 51.3% to 48.7%, less than 10,000 votes. Finkenhauer appeared to be on a similar path as 2018 when she defeated Republican Representative Rod Blum 51% to 46% by carrying only Linn, Blackhawk, her home county of Dubuque, and Winnishook counties. Election handicappers altered their rating of the first district race throughout the campaign, but in the end, Inside Elections and Crystal Ball called it, quote, leans Democratic, end quote, while the Cook Political Report moved it to, quote, Democratic toss-up, end quote. The conventional wisdom was that if Hinson, 37, who has represented a Marion district in the Iowa House for 4 years, could hold down Finkenhauer's margin in those Democratic strongholds and run well in the traditionally Republican rural counties, she would be able to flip the 20-county district that includes Cedar Rapids, Waterloo, Dubuque, and Marshalltown. In addition to the usual issues, economy, healthcare, and ag were, for example, the coronavirus pandemic and an August 10 Hurricane Force derecho became focal points in the race. Cedar Rapids was the epicenter of the storm. When Trump visited Cedar Rapids, Hinson was among elected officials who spoke to him about community needs. Finkenhauer, whose Cedar Rapids home was among those damaged, urged the state to seek federal assistance more quickly. Finkenhauer also introduced legislation calling for tax breaks for owners of homes damaged by the derecho, as well as tax credits to help businesses keep employees on the job. They also were at odds on the government response to COVID-19. Hinson supported the Paycheck Protection Program, and Trump's executive order extending unemployment benefits for workers thrown out of their jobs because of the pandemic. Finkenhauer called for federal funding for local and state governments that have seen tax revenue fall because of the economic shutdown, and she wanted hazard pay for essential workers. Finkenhauer made history in 2018 when she was one of the first two women Iowans elected to the U.S. House. At 29, she also was the second youngest woman ever elected to Congress. However, Hinson entered the race with high name recognition from her 10 years as a TV reporter and anchor at Cedar Rapids Station that reaches nearly the entire 1st District. After telling Northeast Iowans stories, Hinson said she wanted it to be their voice in Washington, D.C. She showed strength as a fundraiser, outraising Finkenhauer in the last two quarters of the campaign. In the July to September quarter, Hinson raised $1.6 million to Finkenhauer's $1.4 million, according to the Federal Election Commission reports. It was the second consecutive quarter she outraised Finkenhauer. Both candidates raised more than 50% of their funds from large individual contributors, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. Finkenhauer received another 22% from political actions committees. Our next article, Zoom back wins seat for Linn supervisor. Winner represents District 3 on the three-member board by Gage Miskimen, The Gazette, Cedar Rapids. Republican Louis Zumbach has won the open District 3 seat on the Linn County Board of Supervisors over Democratic Central City Council member John Stuhlke. That seat on the three-member board currently is held by Democrat Brent Olson, who is retiring. The District 3 seat represents Marion, Ellie, Lisbon, Mount Vernon, Springville, Bertram, Walbeke, Whittier, Prairieburg, Cogan, Central City, El Burnett, Center Point, Walker, Troy Mills, Fairfax, and Walford, as well as most of the unincorporated rural area of Linn County. Zumbach has represented District 95 in the Iowa House since being elected in 2016. The farmer and small business owner is from Cogan. Zumbach said that after, quote, surviving two terms in the legislature, end quote, he realized that the issue he most cared about were affected by local governments and state lawmakers. He has been involved with Linn County Extension, the Linn County Fair, and Linn County Planning and Zoning, as well as being elected Assistant Majority Leader during his time as a legislator. Stolke is a city council member and former mayor of Center Point. He has served there on this council for 22 years and was a mayor for 4 years there. This summer, the 59-year-old council member retired after 38 years with the Linn County Sheriff's Office. He served as chief deputy during his final 11 years. Stolke received his bachelor's degree from Upper Iowa University after graduation from Marion High School. The new four-year term for the District 3 seat begins January 4th. The current holder of the seat, Olson, announced his retirement from the Board of Supervisors back in August. Olson, who has held the seat since first being elected in 2008, decided not to run for re-election, saying he wanted to pursue other opportunities and spend time with his family. Both his children are in high school. The District 3 winner will join Democrats Stacey Walker and Ben Rogers on the board. The supervisors currently earn $115,726 a year after approving a pay raise early last year. The board decreased from 5 to 3 members in 2016 after residents voted to reduce the number, partly in dissatisfaction over supervisors increasing their pay to over six figures. Our next article, Republicans on Pace to Hold On to Iowa House Majority, by Aaron Murphy, Gazette Lee Des Moines Bureau, Des Moines. It appears Republicans will retain unfettered control of the writing of Iowa state laws for at least two more years. Republicans appeared headed for enough victories in Iowa House election contests to maintain their lead over Democrats in the chamber. If those results hold, that means Republicans will continue to own full control of the state lawmaking process. For the past 4 years, Republicans have held majorities in the Iowa House and Iowa Senate and held the governor's office. Democrats had hoped to flip enough House seats Tuesday to earn a seat at the lawmaking table. Instead, they will have to try again in 2 years to win back the House majority or defeat Republican Governor Kim Reynolds. Going into Tuesday's elections, Republicans held 53 seats in the Iowa House and Democrats 47. Democrats targeted roughly a dozen Republican-held seats in Tuesday's elections, but as of 10 p.m. Tuesday, they had not flipped any seats and had lost three incumbents. Quote, the Democrats are not going to take back the Iowa House of Representatives, end quote, elections expert Mike Mahaffey said on WHO TV in Des Moines on Tuesday night. Quote, there's no way the Democrats are going to win back the House of Representatives. In fact, it looks like the Republicans are going to pick up some seats, which is remarkable effort on the Republicans' part, end quote. Republicans said during the campaign that they felt good about their incumbents and also believed they had their own opportunities to flip Democrat-held seats. Republican Eddie Andrews defeated Democratic incumbent Karen Derry in Johnston. Quote, that is a difficult loss of the Democrats, end quote, Democratic elections expert Jerry Crawford said on WHO TV in Des Moines of the Andrews-Derry race. Quote, that was not really expected, end quote. Republicans also won both races in Ankeny. Republican Garrett Gobble defeated Democratic incumbent Heather Mattson in one race, and Republican incumbent John Landon defeated challenger Andrea Phillips in another, one that Democrats felt was a prime pickup opportunity. That meant Democrats suddenly needed to flip six Republican-held seats, and partial results as of 10 p.m. indicated that appeared unlikely. The Iowa Senate also will remain under Republican control after Tuesday's election. The majority there was never really in doubt since Republicans went into the election with a 32-18 advantage. I'm going to head over to the obituaries, and we have quite a few of them, so I will just be reading the funeral services. Charles T. Chuck Kruhl, Cedar Rapids. Charles T. Chuck Kruhl, 83, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, died Monday, November 2nd, 2020. A visitation will be held from noon to 1 p.m. Wednesday, November 11th, at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Cedar Rapids. A funeral service will take place at 1 p.m. Wednesday at the church. Burial will follow at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. All guests are respectfully requested to wear a mask and practice social distancing. A live stream of the funeral service may be accessed on the funeral home website tribute page for Chuck under, quote, photos and videos or media, end quote, starting at 1 p.m. Wednesday, November 11th. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Disabled American Veterans, P.O. Box 145550, Cincinnati, Ohio 45250, to support ALS patients. Donations may be made to the Team Gleason Foundation, P.O. Box 24493, New Orleans, Louisiana 70184, or the Cruel family. Please share a memory of Chuck at www.murdochfuneralhome.com under obituaries. K.B. Nick Slocum, Cedar Rapids. With heartfelt sorrow and loving memories, we are announcing the passing of K. Nick B. Slocum at age 84. He was a loving husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and friend to all he met. Dad passed away Saturday, October 31st, 2020 at Mercy Hospital, Dubuque. In lieu of flowers, donations can be donated to the Salvation Army, Dubuque, Iowa. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, Dubuque, is assisting the family. Mary Jo Votrobeck, Cedar Rapids. Mary Jo Votrobeck, 78, of Fort Dodge, formerly of Cedar Rapids, died Monday, November 2nd, 2020 at the Villa Care Center in Fort Dodge. A private funeral Mass will be held at All Saints Catholic Church. Burial at St. John's Cemetery. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Memorial donations may be given to All Saints Catholic Church. Please leave a message or tribute to the Votrobeck family on the website www.cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. Margaret A. Fields, Cedar Rapids. Margaret A. Fields, 85, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, passed away Sunday, November 1st, 2020 at the Dennis and Donna Oldruff Hospice House of Mercy in Hawiatha. The family will greet friends from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, November 6th at Marion Methodist Church, located at 5050 REC Drive, Marion, Iowa. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday at the church conducted by Vicki Stadley. The service live stream will be available on the Marion Methodist Church website. Burial will take place at Smithtown Cemetery near Lost Nation. All guests are respectfully requested to wear a face mask and practice social distancing. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion is assisting the family. In lieu of flowers, memorials in Margaret's memory may be directed to Pet Pals, 1026 A Avenue, Northeast, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, 52402. Or Marion Cares, 1050 McGowan Boulevard, Marion, Iowa, 52302. Please share a memory of Margaret at www.murdochfuneralhome.com under obituaries. Irene Mardorf, Monticello. Irene Mardorf, 93, died Monday, November 2nd, 2020 at St. Luke's Hospital, Cedar Rapids. Following a brief illness, graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 7th at Oakwood Cemetery, Monticello. Pastor David Remish will officiate at the services. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Luke's Hospice. Gotesh Funeral Home, Monticello, has taken Irene and her family into their care. Thoughts, memories, and condolences may be left at www.gotechonline.com. The family would like to thank everyone at St. Luke's Hospice for the wonderful, loving, and caring support during Irene's time with them. Dorothy Wilson. Dorothy Wilson passed into heaven on September 30th, 2020, after a prolonged battle with metastasized melanoma that spread too quickly and treatment was not successful. Dorothy leaves behind a daughter, Lydia, spouse Eric, son Douglas, spouse Kim, two grandchildren, and two great-grandchildren. She taught high school math and chemistry in Cedar Rapids for many years, inspiring many students. Dorothy had such a spark to her. She would do anything for anyone and loved her family deeply. A celebration of life will be scheduled for her at a later date. Good journey, Mom, till we meet again. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to www.blesietree.org. Online condolences may be left to the family at www.iowacremation.com under obituaries. Betty Mary Rind, Middle Amana. Betty Mary Rind, 85, of Middle Amana, passed away Sunday, November 1st, 2020. Private family graveside services will be held at Fairview Cemetery, Earlville, Iowa, on Saturday, November 7th. There will be no visitation. A memorial fund has been established in Betty's name. Betty was preceded in death by her husband, Lester, in 1999, her parents, Roy and Minnie Schnecke, siblings and in-laws, Eileen, spouse Stanley Holthouse, Dolores, spouse Harold Deitch, and Donald, spouse Nora Schnecke, and a nephew, Francis Deitch. She is survived by nieces Mary Jo and Julie Deitch of Earlville, nephews and the Jean, spouse Mary Holthouse family of Edgewood, and the Dennis Holthouse family of Colesburg, and many special friends. Online condolences may be left at www.closterfuneralhome.com. Steve Allen Becker, West Union. Steve Allen Becker, 72, of Meadville, Missouri, died Sunday, November 1st, 2020, at his home. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Sunday, November 8th, at the Wright Funeral Home in Brockford, Missouri, with Pastor Rex Leppin officiating. The family will receive friends from 1 p.m. until the time of service Sunday at the funeral home. Burial will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made to the Steve Becker Memorial Scholarship Fund to provide a scholarship to the MFL Mark Mack student pursuing an education degree, and may be left at or mailed to Wright Funeral Home, P.O. Box 496, Brockford, MO 64628. David James Van D. Wall, Chelsea. David James Van D. Wall, 81, of Chelsea, Iowa, passed away Monday, November 2nd, 2020, at St. Luke's Hospital, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We were extremely lucky to have him in our lives for an extra 9 years after he suffered a massive heart attack. He bravely fought to stay with us all the way to the end. We are thankful for the wonderful end-of-life care Dave received from the ICU nurse staff at St. Luke's. All memorials will be directed to St. Jude Children's Hospital in honor to Dave's love of children. Online condolences may be sent to www.kneehousefuneralservices.com. A private family burial will take place at a later date. Rest in peace, sweet Dave. We will miss you. Harbach Niehaus Funeral Service is assisting the family. Everett Kennedy, Manchester. Everett Kennedy, 97, of Manchester, passed away Friday, October 30th, 2020. With regret, we will be postponing the memorial service for Everett until a time when it will be safe for many to gather, worship, and sing. The burial will be held privately at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in his honor to Cedar Valley Hospice. Please join Everett's family in sharing memories and stories of his life through his tribute wall at www.cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. Stephen Rucker, Monticello. Stephen Rucker, 72, died Saturday, October 31st, 2020, at Jones Regional Medical Center following a sudden illness. Funeral services will be held at 4 p.m. Thursday, November 5th, at St. John's Lutheran Church, Rural Monticello. Interment will be in St. John's Cemetery with military honors. Friends may call at the church after 3 p.m. Memorials may be made to the Stevens Rucker Scholarship Fund. Thoughts, memories, and condolences may be left at www.gotouchonline.com. GoTouch Funeral Home has taken Stephen and his family into their care. Masks must be worn and fitted properly over the nose and mouth at all times to enter the church. Social distancing needs to be practiced as well. Jackie Coggins, Hopkinton. Jackie Coggins died Friday, October 30th, 2020, in Casper, Wyoming. She was formerly of Hopkinton. She was 88 years old. Family graveside services will be held in the spring. Charlene Lorraine Sear McDermott, Toddville. Charlene Lorraine Sear McDermott, 86, of Toddville, Iowa, went to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on October 31st, 2020, at Shady Rest Care Center in Cascade, Iowa, after a 14-year progression of Alzheimer's and, lastly, COVID-19 complications, with her family near her. The visitation from 5 to 8 p.m. Friday, November 6th, at Cedar Memorial Fund Home. As mandated by proclamation, social distancing must be practiced, which requires a limited number of people to be allowed into the visitation at one time. The use of face masks or shields is expected. Private funeral mass will be at St. Elizabeth Ann Sutton Catholic Church in Hiawatha, Iowa. The Reverend Gary Mayer will officiate, assisted by Deacons Dennis Mulheron and Frank Easton. private family burial will follow Mass at Dunkard Cemetery in Midway, Iowa. A celebration of life will be held at a later in true McDermott fashion. The family extends their deepest gratitude to Meadowville Memory Care, Cedar Rapids, Shady West Care Center, Cascade, and Hospice of Dubuque for their loving kindness and care for our beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and sister. Memorial donations must be made to Covenant House, New York, New York, Disciples of the Lord Jesus, Prayer Town, Texas, or St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church, Hiawatha, Iowa. Please leave a message or tribute to Charlene's family on the website www.cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. Max Duane Wolfgram, Manchester. Max Duane Wolfgram, D.C., 84, of Manchester, Iowa, passed away Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020, at the Good Neighbor Home in Manchester from complications of progressive supranuclear palsy of COVID-19. Survivors include his wife of almost 60 years, Barb of Manchester, his daughter Lori, spouse Douglas Martin of Estelle Springs, Tennessee, his son Brian of Manchester, two granddaughters, Dr. Tara, spouse Tyler Nielsen, and Abby, spouse Michael Ruther, both of Nashville, Tennessee, two great-granddaughters, Tori and Tatum Nielsen, and one great-grandchild on the way, one sister Janice High of Meridian, Idaho, his aunt Ardith Graff of Olwen, his brother-in-law Donald, spouse Kim Cook of Lamont, and seven nephews. Please, no flowers. Online condolences may be sent to www.leonardmuellerfh.com. Private family interment, Campden Cemetery, Lamont, Iowa. Glenda Mayann Lacher, Mount Vernon. Glenda Mayann Lacher, 86, of Mount Vernon, Iowa, died Saturday, October 31st, 2020, at Hallmark Care Center under hospice care. A celebration of life will be held for Glenda and her husband, Russell Lacher, at a later date. Iowa cremation is entrusted with the arrangements. Please leave a message or tribute to the Lacher family on the website www.iowacremation.com. State volleyball, Mustangs back in state semis. Balanced Attack leads Mount Vernon by KJ Pilcher, the Gazette, Cedar Rapids. Mount Vernon has plenty of weapons at its disposal. When they're firing on all cylinders, the Mustangs are tough to defend. Five players tallied at least seven kills in third-ranked Mount Vernon's Balanced Attack that eliminated number 7 Union Community 25-13, 25-14, 23-25, 25-15 in the quarterfinals of the Class 3A State Volleyball Tournament Tuesday at Alliant Energy Powerhouse. The Mustangs eliminated the Knights for the second straight year and continue their title defense against number 2 Clarion CGD in today's semifinal at 3 p.m. Mount Vernon coach Maggie Williams doesn't take the versatility for granted. Quote, that is the gift of this team, Williams said. You cannot just pick a single hitter to commit to. I think that's the hard thing about defending us. Our setter is great at distributing the ball evenly, and you just don't know who you are going to have to defend, end quote. Mount Vernon, 31-6, obviously is powered by outside hitter Lauren Schrock. The University of Iowa recruit provided her normal contribution with a team-high 17 kills. Cameron Ellison added 12, while Natalie Welch had 9. Sarah Romberg and Maddie Cranton finished with 8 and 7, respectively. Quote, everybody on our team can hit, even our back row players and setter, Schrock said. There isn't one person I wouldn't trust getting a kill. It's really good to have all that in your toolbox, end quote. Another future Hawkeye setter, Sydney Dennis, had 45 assists. Romberg had a team-high 3 aces and was efficient with her attacks, converting on a .353 clip. Romberg is an asset as a second middle hitter. Quote, she is outstanding, Willem said. It is a mistake to overlook her, end quote. The Mustangs established the tone early, building an 8-3 lead and going on a 7-2 run for a 15-7 advantage. They also scored 9 of the final 12 points to close the opening set. The second set was a seesaw affair, including 8 ties through the 10-10 mark. Mount Vernon pulled away with an 11-2 run, receiving 3 kills from Schrock, 2 from Romberg, and 1 from Welch, with a Dennis ace. Quote, we came out battling right away, and quote, Schrock said. quote, it is really important, especially in volleyball, to start really strong. I think we did that every set. Union is all about fighting, end quote, added, said a senior, Ali Driscoll, who had 23 assists. Quote, we really do talk in practice about fighting, and just because we're behind, it doesn't matter. The game is not over until someone gets 25, end quote. Mount Vernon opened the fourth set with a 6-2 edge. The Mustangs cemented it with a 7-point run to double Union up at 20-10. They closed it with 3 straight points, advancing and keeping their title defense intact. Quote, it's great, end quote, Romberg said about returning to the semifinals. Quote, I'm just really grateful to be here and with this team, end quote. And I'm going to move back up to election 2020 news. Hart off to early lead for U.S. House seat. Many votes uncounted in race to replace Loebsack by James Jennings, the Union Democrat, former Senator State Senator Rita Hart was leading the race for an open U.S. House seat late Tuesday, although more than half of the counties in the Southeast Iowa district were not yet reporting results. About an hour and a half after the polls closed, Hart of Wheatland held a 13-point lead in the 2nd Congressional District over Republican State Senator Marinette Miller Meeks of Ottumwa. The early results showed 11 of 24 counties in the district reporting, quote, as we see right now, Marinette Miller Meeks is closing the gap on Rita Hart's early lead, end quote. Eric Woolson, a consultant with the Miller Meeks campaign, said, quote, we'll see how things work out, end quote. Hart beat Miller Meeks in heavily Democratic Johnson County with nearly 70% of the vote there, but the Miller Meeks campaign said that was what they expected. Quote, the 30% in Johnson County was our target, Woolson said. We thought that was what we needed to win, end quote. Hart's campaign could not be reached late Tuesday for comment. Healthcare became a focal issue in the race, with the Hart and Miller Meeks campaigns sparring over each other's records over supporting for protecting health insurance coverage for Iowans with pre-existing conditions in the handling of the pandemic. Regardless of the outcome, there will be a new member of Congress. The candidates were vying for the seat that Democratic U.S. Representative Dave Loebsack is stepping away from after serving 7 terms. Miller Meeks ran unsuccessfully against Loebsack in 2008, 2010, and 2014. She is a practicing ophthalmologist in Ottumwa, the former director of the Iowa Department of Public Health, and a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army. Hart served in the Iowa State Senate from 2013 to 2019. In 2018, she was a Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Fred Huberbell's running mate. A former teacher, Hart and her husband own and operate a family farm in Wheatland. Hart outraced Miller Meeks' campaign by more than a 2-1 margin, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. Hart raised $3.6 million and spent just over $3 million, while Miller Meeks raised $1.5 million and spent nearly $1.3 million. Outside groups and PAC spent another $15 million, primarily on TV advertising. Our next article, legal pot, anti-abortion measures pass state ballots, Associated Press. The nationwide push to legalize marijuana gained momentum Tuesday with victories in Arizona and New Jersey. In Louisiana, voters affirmed an anti-abortion amendment as scores of hot-button ballot measures were decided across the country. A total of 120 proposed state laws and constitutional amendments were on the ballot in 32 states. They touched on an array of issues that have roiled politics in recent years: voting rights, racial inequalities, taxes, and education, to name a few. But none directly dealt with the dominant theme of 2020, the coronavirus pandemic. That's because the process to put measures on the ballot began, in most cases, before the virus surged to the forefront. The Louisiana measure asserts that there is no state constitutional right to abort, a move that could come into play if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns its Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion nationwide. In Colorado, by contrast, a measure was trailing in polls to prohibit abortions after 22 weeks unless the pregnant woman's life is endangered. Previous Colorado ballot initiatives to limit abortion also failed in 2008, 2010, and 2014. In Mississippi, a proposal for a new state flag with a magnolia design was leading in the polls. Our next article, Kaufman holds onto seat, GOP leads other House races, by John Steep and Aaron Jordan, The Gazette. Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican of Wilton, got a big win Tuesday night with about 60% of the ballots counted in House District 73, which includes all of Cedar County and parts of Johnson and Muscatine counties. Quote, to win by 20 percentage points is a very satisfying feeling, end quote, Kaufman told The Gazette. Quote, this shows that House District 73 is not for sale, end quote. Kaufman, son of Jeff Kaufman, chairman of Iowa Republican Party, criticized his Democratic opponent, Johnston County Sheriff Lonnie Polkrepek, for taking out-of-state campaign donations and running attack ads against Kaufman. Quote, negative smear attacks do not work. I have won a resounding landslide victory, end quote, he said. This will be Kaufman's fifth two-year term in the Iowa House. Polkrepek won Johnson County, where he's been sheriff for 16 years and has served as deputy sheriff since 1985, but did not prevail overall in the district that is evenly divided among Republicans, Democrats, and no-party voters. Republicans had leads in other competitive districts in eastern Iowa late Tuesday, but there were not enough results to declare winners. Republican Representative Michael Bergen was ahead of Democratic challenger Kayla Cother in House District 55, with a half of precincts reporting late Tuesday. The district, which includes parts of Fayette, Clayton, and Winnesheek counties, has 7,082 registered Republicans, 6,524 registered Democrats, and 6,235 registered voters without a party affiliation. It's a rematch of an extremely close 2018 race in the district, which Bergen won by 9 votes. In that contest, 29 mail-in ballots were not properly postmarked, and the Republican-controlled Iowa House voted to exclude the mail-in ballots, which ensured Bergen's re-election in 2018 after Cother asked for a recount in 2 of the 3 counties. Bergen has held the seat since 2016, and the Republicans have held the seat since 2014. In House District 58, Republican challenger Steve Bradley had the lead against Democrat Representative Andy McKean on Tuesday night, with about a third of precincts reporting. The district, which includes all of Jackson County and parts of Jones and Dubuque counties, has 7,831 registered voters without a party affiliation, 7,148 registered Democrats, and 6,801 registered Republicans. McKean, 71, and from Anamosa, spent more than 2 decades in the Iowa House and Iowa Senate as a Republican before moving to the Democratic Party in 2019 after becoming, quote, increasingly uncomfortable, end quote, with the Republican Party's stances. District 58 has been under Republican control since 1994. In House District 67, Democrat Eric Gajerdy was ahead of Republican Sally Ann Abbott, with absentee and early votes counted. The district includes parts of Cedar Rapids, Hiawatha, Robbins, and Marion. Republican Representative Ashley Henson is vacating the seat as she runs for Congress in Iowa's 1st District. The district has 8,272 registered Democrats, 7,845 registered Republicans, and 7,685 registered voters without a party affiliation. Farther north in House District 95, Republican Charlie McClintock had a lead over Democrat Christian Andrews. The district includes parts of Linn and Buchan counties. Representative Louis Zumbach, the incumbent and a Republican, chose not to pursue re-election. The district has 7,871 registered voters without a party affiliation, 7,326 registered Republicans, and 7,232 registered Republicans. Oh, those are both Republicans, so one of them has to be Democrats, which is a typo. In District 64, Republican Chad Ingalls had a lead over Democrat Jody Grover in the district that covers parts of Buchanan and Fayette counties. Democratic Representative Bruce Barringer, the incumbent, is leaving the seat as he takes a position at Northeast Iowa Community College. District 64 has 7,644 registered voters without a party affiliation, 5,647 registered Democrats, and 5,477 registered Republicans. Our next article, Republicans lead Dems in several Iowa Senate races. Two Eastern Iowa open seats up for grabs, by Aaron Jordan, The Gazette. Several Eastern Iowa Senate seats looked to be staying in Republican control late Tuesday night. Spillville Mayor Mike Klemisch, a Republican, was ahead of Democratic Decorah businessman Matt Tapscott in District 28, an open seat being vacated by retiring GOP Senator Michael Breitbach of Strawberry Point. District 28 includes all of Alamakee and Clayton counties and parts of Winnesheek and Fayette counties. Klemisch, who manages Graphics Incorporated in Kalmar and has served as Spillville mayor for 22 years, ran unsuccessfully for the Iowa House in 2010 and 2012, the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier reported in February. Tapscott, former chairman of the Winnesheek County Democrats, owns and operates Almost Home Early Learning Naturally, a state-regulated in-home child care center, according to his website. He also serves as president of the Iowa Family Child Care Association. Senator Dan Zumbach, Republican of Ryan, had a good-sized lead on Democratic challenger Eric Green of Monticello late Tuesday. Zumbach, a farmer who has served in the Senate since 2013, and Green, a pizzeria owner, are competing to represent District 48, which covers most of Delaware County and parts of Lynn, Jones, and Buchanan counties. Republican Senator Craig Johnson of Independence was ahead of Democrat Pam Egley of Waverly late Tuesday in the race for Senate District 32. Republican Jeff Reichman of Montrose had a lead on Democratic Senator Rich Taylor of Mount Pleasant for Senate District 42 in southeast Iowa. Senator Liz Mathis, Democrat of Hiawatha, won Senate District 34 after running unopposed. Elections without any results reported at 10 p.m. included the District 38 race between Republican Don Driscoll of Williamsburg and Democrat Ivy Schuster of Searsboro. They are vying to succeed Republican Senator Tim Capuchin of Keystone, who will retire in January. Schuster works in information technology at Grinnell College and volunteers with political and women's organizations and as a firefighter for the Searsboro Fire Department, according to her website. Driscoll farms with her husband and is acting president of the Iowa County Farm Bureau. She created and runs the Ag in the Classroom program, which is used in schools and nursing homes, according to her website. State Senate terms are four years. I'll move to the opinion section. Community letters. Head to Prairiesburg for a great tenderloin. We all read where Amy Lacey's Prairie Moon in Prairiesburg, Iowa won the Best Tenderloin Sandwich in Iowa award, a yearly contest by the Iowa Pork Producers Association. Well, last Saturday, a 60-plus degree day with the Hawks playing almost on TV, we decided to check out the claim, jumped into our old convertible top-down, and finally found Prairiesburg on County, not sure which county, Road X-28 between Stone City and Cogan. Absolutely beautiful Grantwood country. Prairie Moon was clean, friendly, socially distancing with great service. Kay ordered fried, I had grilled. We'll never know if it's the best tenderloin. We won't get to try them all, but if all the others are even close to as good, it won't be worth it. It would be worth a try. Congratulations, Amy. You're the best in our book. By Tony Stabb, Cedar Rapids. The Gazette is too one-sided. I poke myself every time I renew my subscription to the Gazette. In fact, running up to the election, I need to poke myself twice. I'd like to find a paper that neutrally presented just the news, kind of like a real newspaper. One without the one-sided presentation. When the New York Times, Washington Post, and Los Angeles Times are your sources, we know your biases. Maybe broadening your source list would help. By Palmer Holden of Iowa City. For our political cartoon today, we have the caption, "Some emblems seen on people wielding great power." And I know these are icons for superheroes because they're recognizable, but I am not a superhero fan, so we'll see if I know them. I believe one is Superman, and that's because it's a diamond with a big S in the middle. One is Batman because it looks like a bat. I want to say this one is Wonder Woman because it's two W's that are connected. One sits right on top of the other. I want to say this one is Captain America. It is a circle with a dark circle in the middle and then a white star inside of that dark circle. The next one is Spider-Man, I'm assuming, because it is a spider. And then the last one is an I voted sticker with an American flag on it. Eastern Iowa briefs Linn County. Linn County now accepting Whitworth Trust grant applications. The Linn County Board of Supervisors now is accepting applications for the fiscal 2021 Whitworth Trust grant program. Eligible nonprofit organizations in Linn County may apply for grant funding for projects that benefit Linn County residents. The online application eligibility requirements and a list of frequent asked questions are available on the Linn County website at www.linncounty.org/WITWER. The application deadline is December 15th. This is a competitive grant process. The funding for the grant program comes from a trust established by Weaver Whitworth, a prominent Cedar Rapids grocer and landowner who died in 1979. The trust provides $80,000 annually for his grant program. Cedar Rapids, tickets for a new holiday show for Elizabeth Vaughn Presley go on sale Friday, as many local performers and touring shows have canceled their holiday shows this season. Elizabeth Vaughn Presley thought to try something she's always wanted to do, perform in her own full-length production at the Paramount Theater. Quote, Christmas in the Key of A, end quote, will feature many holiday music favorites, choreographed dancers, backup singers, costumes, a live band, and more. Quote, Christmas is truly my favorite time of the year. I've always wanted to put together a holiday special, complete with festive skits and dance routines, so when the opportunity presented itself, I couldn't resist, end quote, Vaughn Presley said. The show is being presented by her new company, AE Statics, with a sponsorship from Stillwater Coffee Company. All patrons are required to wear masks and seats are grouped into pods of 2, 4, or 6, depending on your party size, and spaced 6 feet apart. To keep the performers safe, everyone but Vaughn Presley and singers will be masked during the performance and during rehearsals. Tickets will be available for purchase Friday. Tickets are $20 and can be purchased online at artsiowa.com/tickets, in person at the Paramount Theater box office, or by calling 319-366-8203. Firefighter hurt in Coralville blaze, by Lee Hemiston, The Gazette. Coralville fire caused significant damage to a Coralville home and injured one firefighter Monday. Crews were called to 2217 14th Street around 12:10 a.m., according to the Coralville Fire Department. Firefighters got their fire under control in about an hour, but the damage sustained to the home estimated at $200,000. The 8 occupants of the home and attached duplex got out safely, but one firefighter suffered non-life-threatening injuries and was taken to a hospital. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. Firefighters from Iowa City, North Liberty, Tiffin, and West Branch assisted the Coralville department. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. I've been your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org at any time. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I have a great rest of your day.